Boy, patience is a virtue. I remember when I first sobered up, I used to have a really serious anger problem. And when you're doing time, the anger is one of the emotions that, I don't know, a person thinks helps keep them safe. It's part of our survival skills. Numbing ourselves to the bad behavior of our fellow human beings while doing time also tends to save us from the harsh reality of what we do to each other and more importantly, what we do to ourselves. I think you can't hurt someone unless you objectify them somehow. It's like police wouldn't hurt people that they are arresting beyond what is necessary, beyond reasonable force, unless they are objectifying the people they're arresting. And likewise, criminals and people that hurt each other are objectifying people too, because if they weren't objectifying them, they wouldn't rob them. They wouldn't cheat them. If rapists weren't objectifying their victims, there wouldn't be any rapes. Somehow they've learned how to, I don't know, contaminate themselves and recontaminate themselves and lose a little bit of their humanity at a time, because I just don't think people were born that way. It's like, what happened to them? And, getting out of prison and trying to employ new living skills to this world was no easy task. I had to go to, well, I chose to go to a 12-step meeting every day for 90 days, and because someone had suggested that I do so. And then it turned into a meet 1 to 3 meetings a day for 18 months. I was nuts. I had so much work to do on myself to live in this world like, a reasonably functional human being. 18 months of doing meetings, seeing a therapist for a while, doing daily readings, prayer, doing service work early in recovery, doing service work. I think that was probably one of the biggest things ever for me. Service work covers a multitude of sins, if you will. And turn this light up so my background doesn't flash as much. But the 3-second rule, I created a 3-second rule for myself, but not because I like rules. I mean, I'm an alcoholic. Most alcoholics don't like rules, at least not the outside in ones. And but they don't understand there's no such thing as an outside rule anyway. It's always from the inside out. It's an inside out program, not an outside in program, if you will. And when I'm going to these 12-step meetings and early recovery, I'm riding my bicycle. I call it my first car. And I was willing to go to any lengths to keep doing the deal. And I had no sober living skills. I hadn't really done it before, not for long. The first time I tried to get sober, I did it for the judge. Well, I did it for me because I didn't want to go to the prison, but I was trying to impress the judge and manipulate the judge into not sending me to prison. And, I didn't want to go to prison. Who does? Maybe some people do, like the old man in the Shawshank Redemption, because it's the only life he knew. But there was a guy in the Missouri State Prison System who was just like that guy. He had spent his entire adult life in prison. He had a serious crime, really bad, serious crime. But he did so much time that they told him they were going to let him out. And he said, don't let me out. I don't know what it's like out there. I can't do it. And they let him out anyway. You know, they wanted to try to give him some, you know, chance at it. And he ended up sitting on the front door of the prison for 2 or 3 days until they let him back in. And they found a way to just let him stay there, you know, because technically they could revoke his parole anyway for the rest of his natural life. But sometimes I wonder if the Shawshank Redemption didn't get a load of that guy or something and just popped it in that movie. Don't know. I haven't studied it out. But he had no living skills for out here, and I didn't have a whole bunch of them either, you know. The free world was something rather unknown to me. It was like a theory. And the spiritual life, I've heard, is not a theory. It has to be lived. Well, if you don't have the living skill and you don't have the spiritual awareness to attend to the spiritual experiences, how are you going to function? You know, and I remember riding my bicycle, I think it was after a meeting, I'm not sure, but in any case, these kids drove by and they yelled out, "Hey, old effer, get a horse." And I threw down my bike because I was like, I think I was going uphill and I was moving pretty darn slow. You know, it's not because I was in bad shape, but there's some hills in Stillwater, Minnesota that are kind of steep for a bike rider. And I suppose some of the really good in shape professional bike riders or whatever, they're golden. But I was riding an old bike and, you know, I was lucky to do what I was doing. And getting some real exercise, and they yell this at me and I get really angry and I throw down my bike and I'm chasing them up the hill screaming at the top of my lungs for them to stop and I'll kick all of their butts. And I wasn't using as good a language. And as I started running after the car, they had to speed up a little bit, but then they just deliberately went the speed that I was going. And there was a little voice in the back of my head as I'm screaming, saying, what would those AAs think of me now if they could just see me chasing this car, kind of like a dog chasing a hubcap and barking at it, rawr, 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 trying to bite the tire, you know? And the people in that car, they thought it was hilarious. And they had me hooked, line, and sinker. And I finally ran out of gas, physically and somewhat emotionally. But, you know, it occurred to me, if they stopped, what the consequences would be. And it's like 1% of my consciousness was aware of that. What would the AAs think of me? And if they did stop, you know, I thought, well, I could at least take a couple of them down, even though, you know, they're youngsters. And, but that could send me back to prison. So my behavior could have sent me back to prison. And after I quit running after the car, I, you know, went back on the sidewalk and I was walking back to my bike. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I got to never do that again. Never. That was such a mistake. And I'm kind of beating myself up now that I'm not angry, right? And I'm realizing more fully where that could have went and how I'm not really proud of the fact that, you know, the love and tolerance of others is our code and, you know, that they teach in, from the big book and we try to live and all that stuff. It just like flew out the window because of my anger. And, but wouldn't you know it, 1 week later, I'm either riding my bike to or from the meeting. I'm pretty sure it was after the meeting this time. And a yellow Nova-like car came by and there was a bunch of white youth in it not that it matters that they're youth or white, I don't know, but whatever, it's what the what it was. And one of them yelled, "Hey, you old effer, get a horse." And it's like, oh yeah, these guys, you know. And you're probably thinking, I composed myself, I smiled, or I waved at them, or at least did something less than I did the last time. But nope. Mm-mm. Threw that bike down, man, and I was running up that hill after him, cussing him just like I was the last time. And one of the kids was in the back window looking at me and laughing so hard. And he would stop laughing and he'd stare for a few more seconds and he'd just crack up laughing hard again. It was just like the most ridiculous, funny thing he'd ever seen. Like, you know, totally controlling this moron. And who's chasing their car, you know? But seeing somebody so out of control, and there's not a darn thing you can, you know, they can do to you. And if you're kind of got a mean streak or whatever, they're just immature. I don't know what, whatever is going on in their head and mind, you know, two different worlds. But the improvement was that I didn't chase it as long. I didn't chase them as long. And the voice in my head saying, what would those AAs think and what would the consequences of this be, was a little stronger than it was a week before. And I never chased a car again like that. So, you know, I haven't barked at cars in the same way for 30 years. There's been times where somebody, you know, cuts me off in traffic or and I get angry and, you know, different layers and levels of that. And, you know, it's not okay. It's really as ridiculous as chasing a car up a hill screaming in some ways, because it's the same self-saboteur and unhappy part of myself that I'm letting have control over my consciousness that is at least temporarily running my life, you know. And I'm not fully out of control because I'm not ramming the car or cutting them off in traffic, getting out and starting a fight or anything like that. But there's been times I flip people off. And I think the last time I flipped someone off, it was a Washington County sheriff. And he was there's two of them. And I think there's one in training and an old timer, because one looked like he's maybe 10 years older than the other. But I was in the right lane and they got behind me. They could have went around me, but they turned on their light and I got out of their way and they just turned off their light and kept going and they were laughing. And I got so angry that I sped up, got beside their car and leaned over my ex-wife. She's my wife at the time. How do you say that right? But, you know, my ex. And I'm screaming at him and I'm giving him the finger. You, rah, 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 you piece of, rah, 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 you know. And the cop that was driving got really angry, just like me. And the other cop kept trying to talk him down. Because I think the other cop realized that they shouldn't have turned on their light and they shouldn't have did what they did. And then they would end up being accountable for that. Or else just trying to help his partner not lose his mud and do something that everyone's going to regret. And who knows really what was going through his mind, but they didn't do anything to me. And it looked like the newer sheriff, the younger one, kind of calmed down. And my wife is like going off trying to pull my hand down so I could give him the finger. And I kept lifting it back up and, you know, and I finally calmed down and just let off the gas and let the cop keep going, you know. And I've had other incidences too. I remember a lady pulled up next to my car really fast and she looked really stressed, and I was having a really tough day that day. And she's like pointing at me and then trying to watch the road. She's trying to watch the road too. And then she's like pointing somewhere else and then pointing at me and then pointing, you know, and she looked really disturbed. And I thought, what is this crazy biatch doing? And I was just had a hair trigger that day, you know, and I let myself go and I started screaming on her and giving her the finger, just like I did the sheriff. And, you know, actually, I don't know if the sheriff was the last time I did it or if it was this time. Actually, I think it was this time. And she looked stunned when I started cussing at her and giving her the finger. And then I looked in her car and she's got like three young children with her. And two of them are probably too young to understand it. And the other might have got a slight understanding that there's something wrong. And I kind of thought, well, what's wrong with her that she's acting this way and she's got kids in the car? But I was also kind of asking myself that too. And then when I got home, I got out of the car and I realized that my gas thing, you know, was open. And she had been pointing at my gas cap being off, or my gas port being open. And boy, talk about kicking myself at that point. She was trying to help me. And it didn't, you know, ultimately, it doesn't matter if she's trying to help me or hurt me. You know, I lost my control and that's not on her. It's not her fault. But this time, something sunk in. And I'm not going to do that again, it became true. And I'm really glad, you know, but I've had incidences, man. We're all human and there's stuff, what goes on up here, I don't necessarily act on it, right? But that doesn't mean it's not still there. You know, they got a saying I heard in recovery, it's not illegal to be crazy. It's only illegal to act crazy. And over time, I came up with this 3-second rule, the 3-second rule. And I didn't do it because I love rules, like I was starting out to say here. I mean, I'm kind of like a libertarian, kind of in the middle libertarian, maybe a little bit to the left more often than a little bit to the right, but center stream sort of a guy and libertarian wise. And I don't like rules. I don't think we need a bunch of laws to make us do the right thing, you know. And law and order has a purpose, and I get all that. It's in our nature to be orderly, and I think it's a very useful thing to have law and order, but it should be organic, natural, based in love. But in any case, that's not my point. The 3-second rule. I created this rule for myself because I needed it. And the 3-second rule is when someone else is talking or if there's something happening, especially if it's disturbing to me, because I know anytime I'm disturbed, it means that something is wrong with me, not them. At least that's what the big book reads. So I wanted to take accountability and give myself a decompression period. And the 3-second rule is when I'm feeling that way, somebody's talking and I feel like this really intense desire to say something, whether it's a good intense desire or a difficult one, I choose to wait for 3 seconds. And I'll count 1001, 1002, 1003 in my head, right? And then if the person is still talking, then I don't talk. So if their lips are moving, I don't talk. I don't interrupt, or I try not to. I've done it, you know. But that's the rule I set up for myself. And there's a fringe benefit I found that comes from it for the person that you're listening to and for me. It gives the other person time to think about where they're going, and they don't have to be rushed to share with you what it is they're trying to share with you, because they don't feel compressed by your wanting to say something and all that. So I'm showing up and I'm present in a more peaceful way, and I'm training myself to be more compassionate to myself and to the person I'm listening to, or to my circumstances, so I don't act out. And there's some people that need more than 3 seconds, and you learn who they are over time. They have more to process, so they might take 5 seconds. And whatever it is, I'm fine, you know. And this rule over time really, really helped me to decompress my stuff. It's kind of like a de-escalation skill. And this is a very useful skill, I think, that police could use, that everyone could use in their lives, people that are in authority, so they don't act out and blow up and do something they regret or feel they have to cover up, you know, and all that stuff, or that they'll be embarrassed about, or even worse, get in trouble for legally, you know. So kind of think about that, you know. Where do you need your 3 second rule, or do you need one at all? I don't know. And I created this rule for myself years ago, and there's times that I need it and there's times that I don't. And there's been times while I'm doing that 3 second rule where I never get to say the thing that I wanted to say, because the other person just keeps going and going and going and going and going. And I have had to learn to be at peace with that. And I think that's really ultimately what we're after in life, is to have a peace that surpasses reason, that surpasses all understanding, that surpasses what other people do or what I do or have done or will do. It's kind of like the law of acceptance, if you will, or at least access to it. All right, the 3 second rule, use it so you don't lose it. Hit it so you don't lose it. Don't lose it. Don't lose it on somebody. All right, peace out.